Good, so I'm hoping that you're all seeing my presentation, right? Excellent, thanks. Good evening, everyone. Many thanks for involving me in this very interesting meeting. I've found your contributions, those of people who anticipated me, very, very interesting. Yes, as Luis was saying, I'm finding many, many similarities between Liguria and Costa Brava. Now, what I'd like to share with you today is quite a quick, I hope, overview of the history of tourism in Liguria, using sources, visual sources, mainly produced by travelers, particularly foreign travelers to the region from the 19th century to present day, with some reflections on how tourism can develop in the future. So I'll start with reflections on the 19th century, let's call it Grand Tour. It isn't really the traditional Grand Tour because that's earlier. But after the, let's say the Vienna Congress, many, many foreign travelers visited Liguria described it and depicted views and took pictures, photographs. There's a huge corpus number of documents produced in that period that really tell a lot about the perception of the landscape of Liguria by travelers. And then I will approach progressively our time by focusing on the elite Belle Epoque tourism in the Riviera, then mass tourism in the 20th century, and as I already said, tourism diversification in recent times. Liguria, as I was saying, from a geographical point of view, during the Grand Tour was one of the places that was very often crossed by travelers who were very keen on going towards central and southern Italy and look at the ruins of classic Italy, Rome, Naples. But Liguria was in this geographical location between the Alps and then the Mediterranean. It was very much, very frequently crossed and described by travelers. And one of the things that I think are quite interesting to notice and to have into in consideration is the way these people traveled. Because nowadays we talk about slow travel as a new way of enjoying a place, of being a tourist. This trend that we have, this new importance of the word slow, which is also applied to food, slow tourism, slow travel. I mean, slow travel in the 19th century wasn't an option. It was the only thing, the only possibility. So there was a particular way of enjoying places and observing them because travel was slow and often quite dangerous, actually. So many British travelers who were crossing the region in the early 19th century reported of the danger of sailing in the Ligurian Sea, which was actually still better than crossing the region by land. We've got travel accounts, including the one on the left here, of John Chetwood Eustace, who reported to have crossed the Ligurian Sea on board of Captain Gore's frigate. That was much better than doing it by land, since the maritime Alps were infested by banditti. And indeed, crossing the Ligurian Sea in an Italian felucca would have been quite dangerous for the chance of being taken by the Barbary pirates. And we are in the 19th century. There were still pirates at that time. And the other travel account is that by Mariana Stark. Now, there's quite an interesting number of women that at that time crossed Liguria. She stopped at Portofino, and she describes it as a pretty but comfortless little fishing town. Comfortless. Now, Portofino is today one of the most important and most famous leisure exclusive resorts, not only of Liguria and Italy, but I think worldwide. And Dolores today has shown that summer outfits by Dolce & Gabbana with all the various iconic Italian destinations, including Portofino. Portofino in 1828 was a pretty but comfortless little fishing town. But those traveling by land enjoyed not only the sea views, but also the interior. Now this interior, which has been hidden and forgotten then for many decades with mass tourism, was quite central in the tourist experience of travelers through Liguria, particularly this dualism of mountains and sea that often recurs in both views and descriptions. This is a view by John Robert Cousins, we are in the late 19th century. It is taken from the Passo della Bocchetta, which is one of the passes that links the Po Valley and Liguria. So travelers were traveling from north, from the Alps, and this is the place where they first enjoyed the view of the Mediterranean. And we've got these descriptions of the intense blue and the contrast between a Mediterranean lush verdant vegetation and the northern side of the Apennines, quite cold, quite bare, not particularly attractive. So in the descriptions of these travelers, we often have details on how the landscapes were in terms of structure, but also how the landscapes were appreciated by these outsiders, what is called the tourist gaze. As I've already said, many of the travelers were women at that time, particularly British. We are after the Vienna Congress. Liguria was part of the Sardinian Kingdom. Genoa was no longer an independent republic, as it has been for many centuries. It was annexed to the Sardinian Kingdom. And there was a relative stability and improvement of roads at that time. One of the artists that I focused on in my research is Elizabeth Fanshawe, who produced many, many topographical views with a topographical feature and focus of both the coast, as you can see, and the inland area. Things like this one, as you can see, I've often enjoyed this process of going to the place and comparing what was in the 19th century with the current situation. And again, it's quite interesting to see how this very early tourists, ante litteram tourists, enjoyed and perceived these places that today are not touristic at all, right? There are places that are completely out of tourist fluxes. Completely. Now, the comparison between the current situation and the view of this stretch of the Scrivia Valley, we're just above Genova, between Genova and Milan and Turin. You see woodland growth and new infrastructures. These places are functional to transport between rich populated parts of Italy, but they are completely marginal from an economic and particularly with a reference to tourism point of view. Now, the second part of the presentation is about the so-called foreign colonies in the Riviera. Since in the second half of the 19th century, these elite tourists, many of them became residents, people in search of good health, good climate, people often ill with tuberculosis, for example, or other diseases, were quite rich, very rich, looking for a better place to live. It is the time of places, of the development of tourism in places like Bordighera, Alassio, Sanremo, in western Liguria. And their legacy of these colonies still survives in villas, churches, roads, and libraries. Now, by quoting Giovanni Ruffini's Dr. Antonio, a romance that was extremely, enormously popular in Britain, written by a Ligurian writer, Sanremo, as you can read from the bold, is in love with the English. It is, as I was saying, the time of the development of these exclusive coastal resorts in Western Liguria particularly. And the legacy still survives in some of the very beautiful buildings that are still visible, still part of the attraction of the area, although the process that took place in the 20th century meant that these places are no longer exclusive destinations, but they are very much devoted to mass tourism. On the left, you have the Bicknell Library of Bordighera that was established by Clarence Bicknell, a very active, fruitful intellectual botanist, archaeologist, historian, artist, also keen on Esperanto language, that lived in Bordighera in that period, and the Anglican Church of Bordighera, just to provide evidence of how this people changed the landscape of this area. Other illustrious personalities include, for example, Claude Monet, Queen Victoria, many other members of royal families around Europe, intellectuals, influent people, Charles Garnier, architect, French architect, Sisi, Elizabeth of Austria. They all either reside or visited Liguria, and particularly the Western Riviera between the 19th and the 20th century. We've got some very beautiful views of the era by Claude Monet, who was there in 1884. It's the time of this idea of Liguria as a close, exotic destination. It was defined by people, by travelers, the Jericho of Europe, due to the very mild climate. Palms were quite well spread along the coast, and still are, not native but planted, but they grow quite well. So there was this idea amongst Northern Europeans particularly of a destination that was quite close and was still in Europe, but where one already had the feeling, the impression of being somewhere else, somewhere further the Middle East. And there are incredible descriptions of these palm groves in Bordighera that dates back to the Middle Ages. I think it's the northernmost area where plants are still planted and grown for many reasons. So by using a quotation by Alford, 1870, Reverend Alford, he has been told that there are probably now more palms at Bordighera alone than in the whole of the Holy Land. A bit of an exaggeration indeed. It's the time of luxurious, huge hotels. This is the angst of Bordighera, where the Queen Victoria also stayed for a while. It's the time of also foreign investments, foreign entrepreneurs that are also taking advantage of the improvement of transports. The railway allowed you to from Genova to travel to Switzerland, to Paris, in a fast way. Now, these are extremely expensive buildings to maintain, to restore. So one of the problems of today's management of tourism in these areas is that, since tourism has changed, as we should see in a while, these are completely huge expensive buildings to maintain. And this very one, Hotel Hans, today is completely derelict in the very center of Bordighera. Even slightly scary as a place, since it is completely left apart, fallen apart. It's a time of people exploring the hillside, photographers who were very keen on catching the very picturesque details of a landscape where you had this combination of rural but also exotic elements. And I'd just like to share with you this very interesting photograph of sheep grazing amongst palms. sheep that are a symbol of, you know, pastoral landscapes, just like what was shown by some of the presenters today of the Garrocha region. Of course, Liguria also has, you know, pastoral landscapes and transhumance more in the past than today. And this is, again, photo by an English traveler. In the hillside, people like Frederick Lees, who were was a journalist and photographer of the early 20th century, who wanted to go and explore the hills, the interior, the dark interior. This is Dolceacqua, a village that is today part of the Borghi, the most beautiful Borghi of Italy, that for in the 20th century remained sort of in a marginal position in the context of mass tourism. But in the before, people did go and visit these places and enjoyed the relics of feudalism, the majesty of castles, the dark, cool streets, and indeed the landscape around, the mountain path. The air is scented with thyme, mint, and marjoram. Then we have mass tourism in the 20th century, and I could enjoy Louis' presentation and the many similarities that we have in that period. The Tifordis tourism is indeed the same process that took place here, particularly after the Second World War. Now, the Second World War was quite a key moment, since even before, during fascism in Italy, foreign people were no longer welcome. So many British, wealthy British and French people, particularly American, had to leave the region. So there was, just like Costa Brava, a gap in tourism exploitation in that period. Many places were destroyed during the war. Now, after the war, with mass tourism, and the consolidation of internal tourism rather than foreign tourism in the years of the economic boom, it was the summer of the SSS, sea, sa, and sun, and sen. You know, going sunbathing, tanning was a status symbol, and many Italians eventually gained the right of holiday making. So it's increasing of requests of second homes, and those expensive hotels and villas were sold and transformed into cheap accommodation. It's a time of wild urban growth, completely unregulated urban growth that destroyed many areas. The concentration of people along the coast, with a very, very relevant demographic growth, and the depopulation of rural inland areas that were quite central within, you know, the 19th century, very early stages of tourism. It's a time of the so-called rapalizzazione. I think you have other words to mean these. If I'm not wrong, there's possibly marbellizzazione I've heard about. Rapallo, unfortunately for Rapallo is quite an attractive but quite heavily urbanized, as you can see, coastal resort of eastern Liguria. It's a place where we had this massive urbanization due to people's aspiration to have second homes. Everyone wanted to have a house near the sea. And people from Milan and Turin, Italy's richest parts of the country, were quite close to this place, a process that dramatically changed the landscape and the environment of Rapallo, as well as many other areas of coastal Liguria. Something which is quite visible from a comparison between two maps of two different periods, before and after urbanization took place. And there's no time for this today, but the consequences of these are not only on the physical landscape, what you see, but for example, on hydrogeological issues that are so urgent and often so dramatic, floods and landslides in Liguria, Rapallo, and many other places, because often rivers are covered. There has been a massive urban growth, completely non-regulated. I want to quote Italo Calvino, one of Liguria's most famous writers, who talks about this dualism that took place with the increasing sort of polarization of the coast and of cities that left many areas of the inland completely abandoned. So Calvino was from Sanremo. He refers to erase polemically the whole tourist seafront, palm trees, casinos, hotels and villas, almost being ashamed of it. I used to start from the alleyways of the old town, walking up the riverbeds, avoiding the geometric carnation fields and favoring the fasce, the terraces that are very common, typical of Liguria, of vineyards, olive orchards with old and uneven dry stone walls and mule trucks. I used to walk across bare slopes up to where pine woods began, then chestnuts that I passed from the sea, always seen from above, to the tortuous valleys of the Ligurian pre-Alps. I really like this quotation from The Path of the Nest of Spiders, which really tells what is the essence of Liguria. Just looking very quickly at demographic trends in that period, on the left you have the very intense demographic growth of Sanremo along the coast, as opposed to what happened in the Alps here. A complete, incredible, very dramatic depopulation of this area. And as you can see, the population decreased basically between 1861 to 2011 by 9/10. So a lot, really a lot. And the two things, of course, are connected. All the people moved towards the coast. This is very much visible also in the comparison between what was in the past and what is today. This is a place in the Ligurian Apennines, and you see the extent of the regrowth of a place that for decades was not considered a place where tourists could go. Completely marginal. But now in recent times, and I'm approaching the end of my presentation, we have increasing awareness that there can be an alternative to this model of mass tourism along the coast and no people in the inland area, what is called tourism diversification. The example of Dolce Acqua, which was already known by elite tourists in the early 20th century, Dolce Acqua today, also because of the connections with Monet and the legacy with illustrious tourists in the past, is now a very popular place, and people are increasingly visiting it because it's a picturesque place, because of Monet, places that are now becoming central again, I would say. Although, of course, as you would imagine, the numbers are not at all comparable to to coastal tourists, but there is a growth of awareness and interest on these once forgotten places. So there are activities that one can do both along the coast, but also in the inland area. The so-called experiential tourism, outdoor, and so forth. So there is definitely something moving, and I was very interested in noticing that, of course, these kind of things are also happening in your area. This, and I'm done with this last slide, is one of the last advertising posters of Regione Liguria tourist office that, again, in this context of diversification, outdoor, physical activities, experience, titles in Liguria Puoi. You can do many other things than laying on a beach and getting tan. You can experience a region which is not only seaside, but it is much more. Thanks a lot. I'm done. I think I've managed to finish nearly on time. And indeed, if you have questions and whatever, I'm very happy to discuss things with you. Thanks again.